Earlier, I spoke with the distinguished Israeli human rights lawyer, Michael Sfard. He's in Tel Aviv, where he's been warning that the freedom to criticise the Israeli government and protest about the way it's conducting the assault on Gaza is under threat. I asked him to give me examples.
Nothing prepared neither me nor my colleagues and Israeli civil society to what's happening in the last month since October 7th. Only a couple of hours ago, the Israeli High Court has upheld a decision of the Israeli police not to allow demonstrations that were about to kick off in different Israeli cities against the war and in solidarity with the victims of Gaza. And this is unprecedented in Israeli terms. Freedom of speech has always been the cornerstone of Israeli constitutional order. What we've seen in the last month is a crackdown on every dissenting voices you can find in Israel. When I say dissent, I don't just mean those who think that the war should not be waged or not this way. I'm also talking about people who very naively just posted statements expressing sympathy to the people of Gaza or criticism of how Israel is waging its war. We've seen hundreds, really hundreds of arrests that are all based on speech. We've seen hundreds of students being suspended or summoned for hearings prior to suspension from their universities, and employees being warned that their job will be terminated because of statements they've made that does not correspond to the line. It's really something, and of course, incitement, unbelievable, vicious incitement against human rights defenders, mainly against the Palestinian minority in Israel, Israelis, Palestinians with Israeli citizenship, who are targeted by the Israeli right in a way that that is just horrific, really.
Can I just ask you on that? When it comes down to clamping down on freedom of expression, we've seen extraordinary statements by some on the right. I mean, there was even a member of the government who talked about nuking Gaza. Yeah. Have these people effectively been able to make those sorts of inciting statements with impunity?
Look, I for one do not believe, as some people say, that Israel is committing a genocide in Gaza. I have many criticism and I have my own concerns about what's going on in Gaza. But definitely Israel is saturated with genocidal incitement by politicians, by journalists, by social media influencers, by celebrities, and nothing is done to any of them. People are talking openly about, you know, erasing Gaza, about ethnic cleansing of Gaza, about deporting all the Gazans, about not caring about who are civilians and who are combatants. And this just goes with complete impunity. And this is, it adds up to the very, very active fashion in which the authorities are tackling those on the other side who have criticism of the government and the military operations.
Now, in the second part of my interview with the Israeli human rights lawyer, Michael Sfard, I pointed out to him that more than 30 Jewish newspapers and media operations have today printed a long statement warning about the rise of anti-Semitism across the world. I asked him how that may complicate what he thinks really matters, which is that one should be able to criticise individual Israeli governments, such as the current one, without being accused of being anti-Semitic.
You know, your question is the product of years and years of abuse of this sacred fight against anti-Semitism. It's really a sacred and very important fight by Israeli government officials and their supporters who are exploiting the term anti-Semitism and abusing it by using it in context that has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. And I can see it in British politics. The scare of criticizing Israeli governmental policy when it comes to the Palestinians, when it comes to annexationist platforms, when it comes to the horrific things that we see now in the West Bank that no one is talking about, how the settlers have been completely waging raids on the weakest communities in South Mount Hebron and in the Jordan Valley, And people are afraid to talk about it because they're afraid of being accused of anti-Semitism. We know what anti-Semitism is. We know, and there is anti-Semitism, and also now there is anti-Semitism when people are going after Jews for being Jewish and criticizing Israeli policy or Israeli actions is not anti-Semitism.
Now, you are critical both of the leadership of Hamas and indeed of Netanyahu. If we've got the wrong leaders, how do we move towards serious negotiations that could lead to a stable settlement? Because I also understand that you think of yourself as an optimist.
Well, this is a bad timing to remind me that. I'll just say, first of all, I don't just criticize the leaders of Hamas. What Hamas has committed on October 7th is not just war crimes and crimes against humanity in the legal sense. It's a crime against anything that is human. The atrocities are it is difficult to believe that humans are capable of doing things like that. So Hamas is neither a partner nor a legitimate entity for me. Not making any comparisons, I agree that today's government, that is the most extreme right-wing government Israel had in its history, is doing everything it possibly can in order to make sure that the Israeli-Palestinian conflict will not be resolved in peaceful way. In fact, and we have to acknowledge that, in the Israeli cabinet, we have elements that are almost openly advancing a platform of Jewish supremacy between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. They want to see Israel annex the West Bank officially, because it is basically and de facto annexed, but officially, and officially apply an apartheid system throughout the territory between the Jordan River and the sea. And they have to go. They have to be driven away from centers of power, not just because they would not bring peace and security, but because their ideology is illegitimate and has to be thrown away. And yes, even today, even after the atrocities and even in the midst of the very terrible war that is going on in Gaza, where thousands of people, many of them innocent, are being killed, I believe that there is a scenario in which things can get better after the war. And that scenario, we cannot just sit and wait for it to materialize or to happen. We need to bring that scenario. We had to push for it. And in order to push for it, international community, Israeli voices has to be very clear. All people between the Jordan River and the sea must have full political and civil rights and should be able to govern their fate and not be under occupation, not be under apartheid, definitely not under any threat of being annihilated and massacred.
Michael Sfar, very good to see you today. Thank you very much. Mick, we talked earlier about your going on this peace march, but how can there be a peace if Hamas refuse, and they are refusing, to sign up for it?
Well, firstly, I want to identify with everything that Michael said in that interview. I thought it was really profound and really important statement from inside Israeli democracy and Israeli progressive thought. So what we need to do is address some of the grievances. The reason Abbas has got no credibility amongst certain Palestinians is because nobody has ever given him any kind of hint of a deal. So the extremists in Israeli politics have given extremist settlers license to do whatever they want to do, including throwing people off their land. You've got to start with a charter that will give Palestinians a chance make peace with you.
So
otherwise,
can I ask you on that?
You end up with Hamas.
Anthony Blinken, the US Secretary of State, says in the end it's got to be the Palestinian Authority that takes control over both the West Bank and Gaza. Do you think that is the right approach?
Well, they are the authority. They are meant to be the government. And because they've got no deal and got no partnership with the Israeli government, because it's gone so extreme over the last decade or so, there's no ability for them to get credibility.